So I also would like to acknowledge the HRSA for the funding for this, and I don't have any relationships to disclose. Oops, went backwards here. Okay, I'll just use that button. Actually, some work out of AHRQ has identified mental disorders as the most costly set of childhood conditions. Most families of children with mental health issues do have some type of insurance, but they still face significant out-of-pocket expenditures. And Medicaid can confer extensive benefits, but navigating the system can be difficult and confusing for families. And historically, private coverage of mental health services has been limited. There have been some additional requirements coming into this, but I would say that's still the case. And many states do now have mandates for benefits for autism and or mental health, but the impact is unclear. And Kathleen actually will be talking a little bit more about that, about what's happening with the Affordable Care Act and how that's how that may be changing. But we don't have a lot of evidence on how these mandates have affected families. And then the last point here is that this sort of wraparound coverage in which people can add some private health insurance to Medicaid is also available for some, and we wanted to take a look at that. So with all of these choices and perhaps imperfect knowledge about expenditures, families may have difficulty choosing what is the best plan for them. These mandates and Obamacare may have provided more choices, but it's complicated and understanding may be limited for many families. Often the cost-sharing provisions are difficult to understand, and clearly, and as Neil touched on it, the best choice may depend on people being able to anticipate service needs. So the question that we tried to address in this set of analyses were, how do families' subjective ratings of their insurance plans compare to sort of a more objective assessment of that benefit? So sort of how well does it look like families are able to kind of negotiate this challenging choice? And we used two different national data sets to address this, the National Survey for Children with Special Health Care Needs, and then NEPS, which Neil had talked about. And all of these data are essentially prior to the Affordable Care Act implementation. So our hypothesis, our sort of perhaps naive thinking going into this, was that kids with autism and with other mental health needs would do the best if they had both a combined private and wraparound Medicaid coverage. And in particular, we thought that the families would rate that insurance was more adequate. We thought that they would have lower out-of-pocket health expenditures, but perhaps higher total expenditures, reflecting perhaps that they were actually getting more services that were more needed services. So as I mentioned, we used two nationally representative samples to do these analyses, children with autism and or any mental illness, in addition to special health care needs, who were continuously insured, were identified in these two different nationally representative samples. The National Survey for Children with Special Health Care Needs, we used the 2009-2010 wave of that data. And from that is where we got the ratings of adequacy of insurance. And then a completely separate sample of the Medical Expenditure Panel Survey was used to identify total and out-of-pocket expenditures for all health care and for mental health care in particular. And we, again, to have a larger sample, particularly for autism, we did pool 10 years of data from 2002 to 2011 in the MEPS. Okay, so to just talk a little bit more about these two samples and how we identified our groups and some of the different measures in them. In the national survey, parents were asked the following question to identify if their child had autism. Has a doctor or other healthcare provider ever told you that the child has autism, Asperger's disorder, pervasive developmental disorder, or other autism spectrum disorder? And then with respect to mental illness, they were asked very similar questions regarding attention deficit disorder or attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, also depression, anxiety, or a behavioral or conduct problem. So there were a series of questions. So for the purposes of these analyses, if they answered yes to any of those, we define them as having a child with mental illness. In the MEPS, it's done a little bit differently. Parents actually report all child health conditions. And then these parent reports are professionally reviewed and actually assigned three-digit ICD-9 codes. And that's how the conditions are identified. So in particular, autism, if the parent reported something that got coded as the ICD-9 code 299, a pervasive developmental disorder, which includes autism, we categorize them as being having autism for the purposes of this. And then similarly, for a wider group of codes, we identified mental illness. So this includes schizophrenia, psychosis, anxiety, depression, autism, conduct emotional disorder, and ADHD. So slightly different definitions, but that was sort of the best we could do to make them comparable. And I should say, too, that in the national survey, all the children have met at least one of these special health care needs screener items that Neil referred to. In the MEPS, we additionally limited the sample that they had to have, you know, autism or mental illness and screen positive on at least one of the screener items to, again, make the samples as similar as we could. With respect, as I said, so we've identified the samples in these two different groups, in these two different surveys. We're going to look at the family report of adequate insurance from the national survey. The national survey asks several questions about insurance, and if insurance was deemed to be adequate, if the families reported that the insurance usually or always met their needs, that the uncovered costs by the insurance were usually or always reasonable, and the insurance usually or always permitted the child to see the needed provider. So adequate insurance had to meet all three of these criteria. And then in the MEPS, we use the MEPS to identify health expenditures, and in particular we looked at four measures. Each of these are standardized to $2,011 and summarized across the entire year. So total expenditures for all medical services, out-of-pocket expenditures for all medical services, and then comparable measures for mental health services specifically. And then mental health services just were based on both a combination of provider type and the type of service, medication, and or diagnosis. It's a fairly detailed way in which we had to identify medical mental health expenditures. And then we additionally, into the sort of objective or standardized measures of health expenditures, we also used a measure of relative burden, which takes the out-of-pocket expenditures as a ratio to the family total family income, and then that's additionally adjusted by what the level of income is. And this is a Galbraith measure of relative burden, so we looked at both of those things. Okay, so in both the national, our sort of policy variable of interest was, as I introduced earlier, we wanted to look at what type of insurance the family had. So in both the national survey and in MEPS, we were able to identify what kind of insurance the family had. And this was categorized as whether they had only Medicaid and private wraparound insurance, private only, or sort of a catch-all of other. All the families, we excluded families that had any period of uninsurance during the year, because we wanted to just look at families who had continuous insurance. And then for the control variables, again, we sort of followed the Anderson-Adet model, and there is listed sort of our predisposing, enabling, and need characteristics that we took into account in adjusting the analyses in both for the expenditures and the adequacy models. Okay, so our analytic approach, again, we're using two separate samples to do these, but for the insurance adequacy, that used the National Survey of Children with Special Health Care Needs, And we used Logit models to estimate the association between the type of insurance, categorized as I showed on the previous slide, and the parent report of adequate insurance, which again meant that it met all three of the criteria that I referred to earlier, adjusting for the set of covariates. And then in the MEPS, we looked at expenditures, and we looked at means of total and out-of-pocket expenditures by type of insurance, adjusting for covariates, and we used ordinary least squares regression on the log expenditures to do that. And then both of these are complex stratified samples, and we took that into account in our analyses. So some sample descriptors. I don't want to get too hung up on this, but I just want to sort of show you some of the distribution of some of our covariates in the two samples, and for our autism group and then for the all mental health group. So you can see the national survey is a much larger study, even though we did pool 10 years of MEPS. So we had in the national survey we had 3,702 children with autism, and between 18 and 19,000 children with any mental health condition. While in the MEPS we have roughly 350 kids with autism. Again, that's pooled across 10 years, and about 6,000 with any mental health issue. The ages of the kids with autism are a little bit younger than those with mental health. The minority proportion is similar between autism and all mental health. It seems to be a little bit higher in the national survey. Similar proportions where there was a single head of the household, and also with respect to having other kids in the household. Here's the breakdown of our sort of key independent variable, the type of insurance. Families with a child with autism, in the national survey, it was 17.5% had that combined insurance, a little bit lower in the MAPS. And we think that may have to do with the way that the sample is actually drawn, whereas in the national survey, it's drawn to be complete, to be representative of all states. MEPS isn't drawn quite that way, so we see slightly lower proportions with the wraparound there. For the others, it's fairly similar. Okay. Here we also see fairly similar situations between the two samples. Similar proportions. I'll just draw your attention to the complex needs. So that means that they met four or five of the special health care needs screener, and we see that's higher for kids with autism than any more general mental health issue in both samples. And then severe impairment, you'll see quite different prevalence between the two surveys. And that was just we had to use different measurements of the way that severe impairment was identified in the two. But we did our best to sort of control for things similarly across the two samples. So now starting to look at the results. Again, we got our adequate insurance information from the national survey. Just over half of families with parents of children with autism had reported adequate insurance. And a little bit higher for all mental health needs. And then the total expenditures, this is coming from the MEPS, again adjusted to $2,011 dollars. We see higher expenditures for autism than mental health more generally, and that's consistent, of course, with what Neil found, although for mental health expenditures, they're pretty similar across the two. Okay, so now again, we're looking using the national survey data to look at parent report of adequate insurance, comparing across the different types of insurance. And what we see here, actually, both for autism and for all mental health, considerably, those families with Medicaid only were actually the most likely to report having adequate insurance. And then this is private only was the reference group, and then the wraparound sort of came in second here for both sets of conditions. And then we didn't really other is such a grab bag, and it's a fairly small group. You can see we've got pretty wide confidence limits there, so I'm not going to talk too much about that, but we wanted to focus mainly on the Medicaid-only, the wraparound compared to private. So we see that, interestingly, those with Medicaid-only are reporting more likely to report adequate insurance than those with the wraparound, which is this went contrary to what we had anticipated. And then turning to the maps and looking at expenditures by insurance type, on the left-hand side of this figure, we've got the information for autism and then more broadly mental health condition on the right. And the bars here show in the orange is the proportion of the total expenditures that were out of pocket. And then the height of the complete bar shows the total expenditures. So what we see here is that and it did go along with our expectations that we did have the highest total expenditures for those with a combined private and Medicaid insurance. Medicaid-only was intermediate, and private-only actually had the lowest total expenditures, but you can see there from the size of the orange portion of the bar that the families who had private insurance only actually had the largest out-of-pocket expenditures. And that held true both for autism and for any mental health condition. So this is total health expenditures. This figure shows the same for just mental health expenditures, and we see essentially the same pattern. Highest total expenditures for the combined group, intermediate for Medicaid only, and least for private only, but we see the highest out-of-pocket expenditures, particularly for any mental health conditions for those with private only. So looking at this a slightly different way, and again, this relative burden measure takes into account out-of-pocket expenditures as a ratio to total family income, but then actually adjust that further because it's deemed that what would be sort of a reasonable proportion or what would constitute a burden would actually depend on how much your total income was. And again, on the left we have autism, on the right mental health conditions and bars for each of the three types of insurance. And while there's some variability here, what is consistent across both is that it's the families with Medicaid only that are most likely to have more than a low burden. So if you combine the orange and sort of gray at the top, that's the greatest for the Medicaid only. So even though they had the lowest out-of-pocket expenditures, they were actually the most likely to have some substantial burden. That burden was least actually for those with private insurance only. Okay, so if we combine all of these different ways that we've looked at this across and think about what we had hypothesized, it doesn't actually line up all that well. We found that with respect to the adequacy rating, the families with Medicaid only actually were the most likely to rate their insurance as being adequate, and those with private only were the least likely to rate it as adequate, with the combined insurance being in between. With respect to out-of-pocket expenditures, those with Medicaid only actually had the lowest out-of-pocket expenditures, and you can see that it's an exact flip of the adequacy rating. But because of the fact that more expenditures is worse, you could say that the adequacy rating is actually paralleling what their out-of-pocket expenditures were in terms of the rankings. The total expenditures actually, they were the highest for those with combined insurance. Perhaps those families, although we don't really have a way of knowing it, are getting the best care. But then the actual level of burden, in terms, if you just look at it as likelihood of having a low burden, the families with Medicaid only were actually the least likely to have low burden, and the private only the most likely, and the combined were in between. So there seems to be some kind of a little bit of a disconnect here. So why the mismatch? So the preferences seem to run contrary to that relative burden measure. This is, in fact, consistent with some other research showing that higher ratings of Medicaid versus private insurance. And folks have come up with different possible explanations for this. Is it some sort of social obligation? People feel that because they have Medicaid, they need to rate it highly. Perhaps families with Medicaid actually have lower expectations for their insurance. Maybe some of the ratings of the insurance are influenced by the fact that that sort of combined insurance is difficult to navigate, to figure out, you know, how to get all of your needs met. So what it seemed like from looking at these two things combined was that, you know, you could just predict what the adequacy ratings would be based on knowing what the ranking of the out-of-pocket expenditures were. But is that really the end of the story? And of course, for researchers, we don't think so. So what do we think are sort of the next steps? And Kathleen is going to touch on this a bit more. We know that the value of the health insurance marketplace and how useful that's going to be really depends on families being able to choose the best plans, that what meets their needs. And that's clearly a challenging thing to negotiate. So maybe families need help with that. And Neil also alluded to this. And this work does suggest that there may be sort of a knowledge gap, that people may not be choosing the plans that are going to actually leave them with the lowest likely, you know, the lowest financial burden. Perhaps some policy changes could simplify these choices, but there may be an educational component needed as well. And as I said, this work is mostly pre-ACA. We need to understand better the effects of the reform across states, which we really couldn't do with the data that we had. So I think that's good. I'll be happy to take any questions. Yes?
Can you describe what the Medicaid plus private looks like?
Kathleen, can you address that?
Yeah, six states have a particular wraparound program where kids with private insurance who have extended needs can qualify for a Medicaid wraparound. So then Medicaid's always the payer of last resort. So the private insurance pays what they would normally pay, and Medicaid pays the deductibles, co-payments, and also the covered benefits under Medicaid plans is typically broader than private insurance, so Medicaid might be there to cover occupational speech or although there are just six states that have this particular wraparound program, there are also a couple of other avenues through which families can get their kids.
So I was wondering, is the result sensitive, that adequacy question based on what the reference insurance category is? Do you guys have stayed around with this? So if you meet other the reference group, or if you have uninsured in your sample and made uninsured as the reference, would that change the odds of individuals identifying?
Well, if they were uninsured during the entire year, then they wouldn't have rated the adequacy of their insurance.
The fact that we're not asked, like, okay, so I don't know what's
true. Yeah, it wasn't asked, each family was asked about the adequacy of the insurance they had at the time of the survey. So we don't know anything about how, you know, if a family's insurance changed over the course of the year, if their rating of adequacy would have changed. Does that answer your question?
So I would instead of having private as the reference group, if you have other as the reference group, does that change?
Statistically, it wouldn't, except for the fact that we wouldn't want to do that because the other is a small group, and so you don't really want to have that as your reference category in a regression model. Yes, they have a higher odds ratio and a wide confidence limit. It's a fairly small group. So, yes, I mean, the other groups would look worse compared to that.
Right.
Absolutely. But we didn't really want to focus on the other insurance because we can't sort of categorize what it was, so we wanted to make private only the reference group. But if we had combined or Medicaid only the reference group, the rankings would still have come out the same. Just statistically, it would work out that way. Any other? Yeah.
I'm not familiar with the survey, but for the all healthcare expenditures, does that also include premiums?
Does that include insurance? No, it does not.
Okay.
And it does have the same limitation that Neil alluded to, if y'all were here for his presentation. It's only medical. They're only asked about their medical expenditures. So if they had services, you know, community services or school-based services, that's not captured in the MESC.